Are you caught in the whirlwind of overwhelming responsibilities? And does the very thought of Monday morning send chills down your spine? Well, it's time to toss those feelings out the window. Welcome to Season 3 of the Take Notes podcast, where you get to make yourself the priority in order to show up as your best self. I'm your host, Jen Rafferty, former music teacher, emotional intelligence practitioner, mom of two, and founder of Empowered Educator. And I've been where you are. In this season, we're not just talking about surviving, we are diving deep into thriving. Are you ready to take the lead in your life? Well, let's do this. Hello, and welcome back to another fabulous episode of Take Notes. I am so excited to have this conversation today with Jeff Evner and Larry Dake. Thank you so much for being here, both of you.
That's a pleasure.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I would love to just dive into your work because I think it's something that we don't get a chance to talk about very often. You both have been the co-author of this fabulous book called Dads, Leaders, and Father Figures. And what was so interesting to me about this particular topic is moms get a lot of attention when we're juggling everything and work and home and career and life and basketball practice and singing lessons. And dads don't get as much of that spotlight of the juggle that happens. So I was really intrigued to hear your take on this. And I'd love to know a little bit about how this started. Why was this something that you felt called to write a book about?
Well, I think the book has different entry points, depending on where you are in life. We're all at different parts of our lives and fatherhood journeys and leadership journeys. And I think it goes back to me to when we all first met for the first time, right after the 4th of July in Syracuse, New York. But we all presented our chapter and we did categorize them. And that's really what became the book. And I think we could resonate with so many of each other's stories. And I think as folks read this, they'll find something to resonate in there as well. I mean, there's moments of joy, discovery, frustration at different parts of our careers, not just in terms of our leadership, but our journey to these positions. And so I know we all bring different experiences and perspectives to the table. Not just the four of us, but many of the guest authors that we also had write a chapter. And I don't know if it's the kind of book that you read, say, cover to cover, instead of just finding the places that speak to you and then kind of going from there.
What Larry said was kind of hit home with me is, and I never really thought about this, but being a leader and being a father and being a father figure to others, it's seasonal, right? You have seasons where everything's going great. And then you have seasons where it's not so great and you got to adjust and you got to adapt and you got to be intentional about those. But so I think sharing that, we pride ourselves on being great at what we do. Not every day for Jeff Evner am I a great father. Not every day am I a great leader. Not every day am I a great father figure. Because I tell you, getting the kids ready for school this morning alone was a very difficult morning in the Evner household. But it's not always like that, of course, but it's seasonal. And I think that's a very important message that we're trying to share is that in the seasons of life, you're going to be good in some areas and you're not going to be good in some other areas.
Yep. So let's stay there and talk about that because that is something that it's not forthcoming. It's almost like a bait and switch, right? Where it's, okay, here's what your life is going to look like. You're going to be a dad and you're going to be a leader and you're going to be a husband and everything's great. And the truth of it is that it's messy and there are seasons and there are places where we fall down on our face because, of course, we know that's where the lessons are. But those aren't the times it's given a whole lot of attention. And from the work that I do, there's tends to be a whole lot of shame involved with that piece of our lives also that we don't talk about. So I would love to know how you have on your own journeys realized that these dips and these seasons not only are essential to the journey, but they need to be celebrated just like the high peaks and shared so we normalize it for everybody. What was that like for you to discover that on your own?
I think a lot of learning to be comfortable with being vulnerable with myself and realizing that I'm not going to be able to be perfect all the time. I think having been, and Jeff was as well, a very young administrator, you feel this need to really prove yourself and be at every event and be at this and be at that. And there's certainly times when that happens, but then there's also times where setting those boundaries is really important as well. And I think just being vulnerable enough to realize like what you're experiencing and what you're facing, and maybe you're guilty tonight because you're not at home, but you know that on Saturday, you're going to be able to spend your entire day with your family I think for me, it was sort of coming to that recognition of trying to be balanced about balance. And that's a major topic that there's several stories on in the book, is how do you sort of navigate that? And there's no right answer. Like, this book is not, here's four guys who got it figured out. I think it's more like, here's four guys that are probably just like you reading the book that are trying to figure it out on a day-by-day basis or a month-by-month basis. So I think it's trying to be balanced about it and being vulnerable. That, speaking for me, certainly was helpful.
Yeah, and that vulnerability, therein lies our connectedness, in my opinion, right? I read a book one time by John C. Maxwell. And Jen, if you know me well enough, I always bring up John C. Maxwell. But sometimes you win, sometimes you learn, right? Those are your only two options. You can't let failure. If I let failure overtake my life, I'd never be where I'm at.
Sure.
I wouldn't have the family I have. I wouldn't have the wife I have. I wouldn't have anything in my life that resembles what I have now if I let my failures, my mistakes, and my heartaches run my path or govern my path, right? It's what I learned from those mistakes. And then what really was a great learning experience for me, and I knew this book was going to be so meaningful, was reading Larry's chapters in draft form, reading Andrew's and reading Kevin's, and learning from them. As I'm a father of the youngest set of kids of us four. So moving forward, this book is becoming like a guide for me.
Sure.
Yeah. How to deal with a soon to be 8-year-old, a soon to be 6-year-old, and eventually be a 12-year-old, eventually be a 20-year-old. Yeah. These guys are living this right now. So, you know, like Larry said, sharing that journey of our mistakes and learning from those and sharing those. And it's the vulnerability, which I think makes the greatest leaders in the world fail multiple times.
Yeah.
Right. But they're humble enough to learn from their mistakes and share their mistakes.
Yeah. So my question then is, we have this societal pressure for men, particularly to, as you said, prove yourself consistently, whatever that might mean, whatever story you subscribe to or belief you might have about what that looks like. And so reconciling that with understanding cognitively that vulnerability is important for leadership, at the same time, wrestling back and forth and oscillating perhaps between this idea of proving yourself with toughness and hustle and affront while knowing about this strength in vulnerability. How have you discovered, or how have you seen other men in education reconcile with these two opposing forces?
Yeah, I was going to say one way that I've seen it not work is I've seen leaders take on positions that maybe weren't the best fit for them at that time in their life. And I know when I first became an administrator at 30, thinking that I knew everything, was going to move right up the chain and all these kinds of things, it took some time to realize that's not the paradigm that at the end of the day is going to ultimately make me happy. All of those things are kind of shiny objects. And what I've come to realize is that I'm no more happier sitting here as a superintendent than I was when I was a teacher, right? In fact, in a lot of days, it's probably the opposite, because there's just something pure about being in that classroom that you lose. You do lose when you become an administrator and you become a little farther removed from it, perhaps, particularly at a district office position. So I think that paradigm of, if I can just get X position, I'll be happy, is one that I've learned is really false. And really what that happiness entails, when you go home at the end of the day, and Jeff's a great example of this too, our kids have really no idea what we do on a daily basis. And so they're just happy that we're home. And so it's taken me, I would say personally, a while to just set that ego aside and say, that's not how I'm going to measure this. But I think when you're young and when you see everyone else possibly doing it, I'll give you a great example. I teach in the BU educational program. And just when I came through my program, it would never have occurred to me to apply for a job before I was done with my program and certified. But you see it now, people getting positions either right when they're done or before they're done. And I had a conversation with a gentleman who's finishing up the program yesterday, who is feeling some pressure to apply for a position that he doesn't really want. But I think he's feeling that external pressure of, this person got a job and this person got a job. I'm trying to say to him, if it's not the right fit, you will not be happy. Ultimately, you will not be happy. And I think because it's so easy to share our successes on social media without any context, right? Any context at all, any nuance, it looks like everyone else has it figured out. In reality, they don't any more than we do. So I think it's taken some time to get there, but But I think that fit is really important for our entire life, professional and personal.
And that's, Larry, you mentioned ego, right? And as I progress through my career, yes, I still see some egos from men, specifically since we're talking about dads, leaders, and father figures, that they're always looking for what's next, what's next, what's next, right? You know, when I first met Larry, I was just, our careers are so similar as far as the years we taught, the type of districts we worked in, the type of administrative jobs we had from the building level to the central office. But it really is becoming a thing where you're seeing more men set their ego aside, because I think we're learning and we're kind of understanding that at the end of the day, nobody, man or woman, on their deathbed ever said, I wish I worked more, right? I wish I was had more time with my family. I wish I had more time to go on vacation. I wish I would have taken the time to be where I needed to be, which is with your family. And I think the ego part of us is, we talk a big game sometimes, like, you need to be with your family, put family first, and we're the last to do it. That's kind of the administrators that I looked up to had that mindset, but you're starting to see I'm starting to see a shift in that when we say put your family first, we mean it. And we're going to support that, whatever it means, even if that means going outside the contract if we have to, so you as an educator can be your best self every day. That's what we have to do. So it's setting that ego aside that it's okay. Larry's, I think, 4 years younger than I am, or 2 years younger than I am. He's a superintendent and I'm not. Prior to the last 3 or 4 years, I'd have been like, I got to get there. I got people beating me. My colleagues, people my age, are already becoming superintendent. I'm not a superintendent yet. That ship sailed a long time ago. I've started to surround myself with the right people. I've started to focus more on what's most important, and that's my 3 children and my wife. The job is the job. And yes, I love my job. I love the district. My kids go to this district, but I need to pour into them more than I ever did before. I've been an administrator now for 17 years. So for the first 10 years as an administrator, I didn't have kids. So I got accustomed to a lifestyle, to a schedule.
Do everything.
I'm going to be at everything because I can be. I don't have responsibilities beyond myself and my wife. Yep. That's it. And we used to go to everything together. Basketball games, football games, concerts, you name it. But really, I'm seeing a shift in setting the ego aside. And I think it's because we know more, right? Do better because we know better. And I think we're getting to know better, that we can only take in so much stress, so much pressure, and carry it all before we crumble.
Sure.
And Jen, I think that's where you provide such a great resource for people, is in that coming to an understanding that if you're not pouring into yourself, you can't pour in anybody else.
That's it. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly it. The things that you are saying here, setting the example, being the example, is essential, right? Because as you were growing up, the models, the men who were models for you, did things a certain way, which perpetuated these things that you're saying here, like this pressure, this race to the top, the climbing the ladder, getting to the next place, and all of that story of what, quote unquote, needs to happen for you as a career man is simply a story. And the only person who gets to change that story is you for yourself. But the power then lies in when you get to be that change, because you embody that change, you set a different example for everyone else around you, which is that generational transformation piece that we're all, that's our business, right? We're in transformational, generational change for our kids. And the only way that happens is if you change yourself. And to your point, Jeff, that you just mentioned, you were married without kids for the first part of your career, going back to our beginning of our conversation, talking about seasons. That reflection in that is so important. And I would love to ask, and I'm sure, Larry, you've experienced seasons in some of these ways too. We all have. How have you been able to give yourself permission to give yourself grace during those transitions? I'm presuming a lot here. Perhaps you haven't. And that's also something that's, I think,
important to talk about. It's a journey. I mean, I think it goes back to sort of understanding what your own core mission is as a person. So I'm comfortable at this point in my, even though I'm brand new to my district here, I'm comfortable enough at this point in, 14 years into being an administrator, of knowing who I am and how I can operate and what I'm comfortable doing and not doing. For example, tonight we have an open house here at our middle school. There's also 3 or 4 home sporting events, right, that are all taking place here on our campus. So I can hit 4 or 5 things in one night And I'm not going to stay for the entire thing and everyone, but I'm going to be out there visible and being supportive. And I think it also comes back to fit. One reason I was so attracted to Chenango Valley as a school district was that my office, the reason I keep looking out here is this is the main student entrance of the school. It's right outside my office. It's the middle school, high school on one campus. The bus garage is right down a hill. All of our athletic fields are here. And we have two elementary schools that are within 2 miles of each other. So I can really be everywhere. The district I was in with 10 buildings spread across the small city, it was hard. It was really hard to feel connected. And my leadership style is one where I need to, it's more personal. I want to feel connected to what we're doing. So I think, again, when you're in the right fit and you're energized, and although it's not perfect, you feel like it's doable. I think that feeds at least my physical and mental health more than anything else. I'm coming off of a fit where I really liked the people that I worked for and with. It got to a point where I wasn't really sure it mattered how I showed up every day, right? I just had this over 3 years. If I came in and knocked out of the park, or if I came in and didn't, I wasn't really sure if I was making any kind of difference. And so I feel like that fit and being energized helps you make better decisions about some of those transitions.
I fully understand that. And that is so important, this idea of best fit versus climbing the ladder to the next thing is essential for the longevity of your career. I mean, what does it matter if you retire after 35 years if you're unhealthy?
Exactly right.
I agree completely.
And there's things that happen in your life where the light bulb goes off and you finally realize, hey, am I doing this for the right reasons? And Larry says it's your personal mission, right? So as a leader, you have to understand why you do what you do. What is my why? I'm as hard-headed as anybody. Anybody that's close to me will know that I'm hard-headed. We talk about our health, right? And I can talk about this. I had a stroke at work on July 26th of this year, right? Come to find out, I have a thing in my heart that 30% of the world's population has. It's a little hole in the upper septum, the wall between your upper chambers. It's fixable, but I was at work. My arm was immobile. I couldn't, do anything with it.
Wow.
But I was sitting in the meeting and I'm like, just going to stay here and maybe my feeling will come back here momentarily. But I work for a wonderful superintendent that said, what is going on? I said, well, I can't feel my arm. It doesn't move right now. He goes, you need to go to the hospital right now. So I went but it took my boss to say, Jeff, we're here tomorrow. It'll be here the next day. It'll be here the next day. I'm under good leadership myself as a district leader and having someone model that to take care of yourself. Yep. I'm not an unhealthy person. I exercise. I do everything I'm supposed to do as a 46-year-old man to take care of my body. But those things happen, right? You have to take care of yourself. And Larry says that. He said it very well, better than I can, is what is my why, right? If I'm here to be unhealthy and die on the job, then shame on me. My kids need their dad around. You got to take care of yourself. And that's the most important thing. You come before anything else. I can't be good for my wife. I can't be good for my children. I can't be good for the people that I serve in Homer without my health being a priority.
And I think a measure of our leadership really comes down to, are we helping to create and sustain environments where people can leave here at the end of the day, the end of the week, and function well in those other portions of their lives? Or are they so stressed out? Is the environment so toxic that they've got nothing left? And that example Jeff gave was really powerful. And even simple things, like I don't email staff on weekends. I don't email my team on weekends, on Fridays. I know it's asynchronous, it's an email, you can read it. But there's something about getting email from your superintendent on a weekend that diverts your attention from where you should be. I'll write and draft a lot of emails and save them, and they'll go out on Monday morning. But unless it's an emergency and I'm contacting our assistant super, our director of facilities for something, that's just a little piece that I've come to appreciate. Early in my career, I would have sent an email, and I did, at 5:30 in the morning to show how hard I was working.
Yep.
Which was about my ego and not about the recipient, right? So again, it's taken some time to get there, but I feel more comfortable in that space now.
I tell younger administrators, I haven't had email notifications on my phone as an administrator in almost a decade.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't either.
Emergencies don't come via email. Everyone knows my number. If it's an emergency, they'll call me. Otherwise, it's going to wait till the next day because it's an email.
Yep, absolutely. And trying to take that approach with email in general, because it's one of those things that people say, My principal says they spend 75% of the time on email. I have some demo, but there's reasons for that. And there's reasons that you don't have to do that. And so, you know, that's a whole other topic. But I know that email has definitely become one of those things that we can't really envision the workplace existing without. That unless it's approached the right way, can take over someone's life in a very bad way.
Yep. Sure. I think to your point, Larry, you know, you had said your own self-reflection really made a change for you, which then affected your school culture and the way that you interact with your staff. And I think that's a really important point that I want to highlight here, because your personal growth, I mean, you, everybody, right? Everyone, you, your personal growth is completely reflective of the growth and expansion of the organizations that you serve. Your organizations can't grow and expand beyond your capacity to grow and expand personally. And that example that you just gave is a beautiful example of that.
Yep.
So I want to just shift for a second, because we keep circling around this idea of success, and I really want to hit it straight on. It sounds like throughout this journey for both of you, you've really had to redefine success. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, what did that process look like for you? Was there a moment, you know, I know, Jeff, thank you for sharing that moment with us. That is, I know, will resonate with so many listeners who are mm-hmm. tuning in right now. Was there a moment in your journey that you realized this definition needs to change? And what is your definition of success now?
My definition of success changed, I would say, January 21st, 2016, when my first son was born, and realized that this world is more than just Jeff Ebener. Now I'm responsible for not only my wife, but also a child. And then on February 8th, 2018, my second son was born, right? And then on April 14th of last year, my daughter was born. So my definition of success is no longer to be a superintendent of schools just for the sake of being a superintendent of schools. I still remember my first class at SUNY Cortland to take my CAS course. And what do you want to do when you get your degree? And I was the only one who said, I want to be a superintendent. I still remember that moment vividly. And yeah, do I want to be a superintendent? Yes, I do. But it's not going to be the be-all, end-all anymore for Jeff Ebener. My be-all, end-all is my wife, Beth, my son, Baylor, my other son, Carter, and my daughter, Emma. Those are my be-all to end-all. That's when my definition of success changed. I'm not chasing what I thought was the most important thing in the world, which was to be a school superintendent at 30 years old, when now I have a great job as an assistant superintendent in a great district where my kids attend. And I have a wonderful superintendent who supports me, guides me, gives me grace when I need it, pushes me when I need it, and just continues to be a good role model for me. I think it's an ever-evolving definition of success. But early on in my career, it was, how can I be a young superintendent? And I had enough superintendents to tell me, don't do it. I was born tonight, but not last night. So, you know, life has a way of ebbing and flowing. And again, my definition of success definitely changed once I had kids.
What about you, Larry?
Yeah, mine was sort of right around when the pandemic started. That week before, I think we all knew that was all going to fall apart. I had been a principal and then finishing my fourth year as an assistant super. Not my most previous district, but in the district prior to that, I had worked for a superintendent who brought me over from another district, promoted me to assistant superintendent very quickly at age 36, did not want to pursue the superintendency at that time when she left. So someone else came in, and that was the day, it was March 11th, now we're throwing dates out, March 11th of 2020, that just on a casual pop into my new superintendent's office, she pretty much told me that my services weren't needed if I didn't want to be there anymore. And I'm thinking to myself, like, wow, I neglected my family for 7 years to get to this moment. And listen, it all worked out. I ended up in a different district, a bigger district. And it was a great move for me anyway. I'm thankful that happened in some ways, because I don't know if I would have been nudged to pursue this bigger position had I just been comfortable. I was comfortable there. And it just, at that point, I realized that I'm never just going to work blindly for an organization again. And had this not worked out here in Shenango Valley, I would have been back in Binghamton, my previous district, as an assistant super. I didn't apply anywhere else. It's just as I researched this district, it felt like the kind of place where I could lead in a way that's true to me in a very manageable size district. You know, 1,600 students, 3 buildings. To be the superintendent of Binghamton and 10 buildings and 5,000 students, I would never aspire to that. So I think it led me to find out my fit, but I also, at this point, never will blindly work for an organization again, just knowing that it can all be taken from you like that. And in my case, it worked out well. But in the first couple of days after that happened, I wasn't sure it was going to. I thought my career was going to be over. Who's going to want to hire me? This is a small area, kind of everyone knows each other. It was a shock. It was a shock. And I think at that moment, I wouldn't say it changed overnight, but over time, I realized that always being the one to go and do it and forge ahead, unless it's for the right reasons, isn't really the right paradigm.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes it does take those very low moments in our life to turn on a switch or to allow a new perspective to appear that we were not able to see before. And looking back, of course, we always get to say, I'm so glad that horrible thing happened.
Sure,
because
right.
Look where we are. Yeah, look where we are now. But, you know, I think boiling down both of what your answers were to this question, and correct me if I'm wrong, this idea of success, it sounds like for both of you, is being able to act in alignment with your values.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it.
Yep. And that's being able to articulate your values is important. And I honestly think, and not just in education, but I think in general, in any type of organization, people appreciate people who are true to themselves, leaders who are true to themselves and are really truly in it for others, right? Yeah. The best leaders are others centric, but they do take care of themselves too, right? And I think we're going back to the word vulnerable. People appreciate that. And I think, you know, I was just meeting with a teacher before this podcast over at our junior high school. And we had such a great, authentic conversation where the teacher was able to vent a little bit. I was able to vent a little bit. We picked each other up, dusted each other off. And now her class came in and I came back over to my office to do this podcast. And she's teaching right as we speak. But it's those moments, those conversations that realize that you're true to yourself, I think your audience appreciates that.
I would agree.
Yeah. And ultimately, your students see that. We're in a place where our kids are watching us to learn how to be an adult.
I think that's just an underappreciated thing you just talked about was whenever I interview, they ask me about leadership. And I say it's highly visual. Talk about a John Maxwellism. That's one of them. Leadership is highly visual. But being an adult is highly visual. For students to see myself, the guy in the suit, talking to a teacher and having lighthearted moments and laughing and conversing in a very respectful manner, we're role modeling for kids. Even when we don't know we're role modeling for kids, they're watching us all the time. So I'm glad you brought that up, Jen, because that's near and dear to me. And I'm not, honestly, you talk about seasons. I'm not in a good season right now modeling for my children. I'm a little stressed. I'm taking out on them. My work schedule's getting a little amped up, you know, as schools come back into session, but that's something I'm cognizant of.
Empowered Educator Programming is great for that.
It is. It's a wonderful program.
It's true. They're watching our every move all the time. And so, you know, to your point, Jeff, when you were saying, I'm talking to this teacher and I'm the guy in the suit and we're having this conversation, if you're not pouring into yourself, you're not able to have that lighthearted moment with that teacher for them to see. And bringing it back home to where we even first started, it's that you need to be in alignment with you and your values and your mission and your why and take care of yourself so you can show up for others. Yeah, amazing. So if someone was listening right now and, okay, Jeff, Larry, I get you, I hear you. What can I do today to make some change?
Yeah, I can just speak for something that I've come to appreciate more. Maybe it's getting a little older, but maybe it's just being more experienced. But the things that I'm doing today will impact how I show up tomorrow, right? And so everything from the food I'm eating, whether I'm active or not, you know, do I have 1 glass of wine or 2 glasses of wine? All of those things impact my ability to make good decisions and lead tomorrow in alignment with my values. So I just tried to really become cognizant of how interdependent each day is among each other. In fact, I yesterday was really tired and I could tie it back to the fact that I think on Friday I ate food that I'm not used to eating. It was my sister turned 40. She had a little get together and that just stayed with me for a couple of days. And it impacted sleep and it impacted routines. And obviously, there's going to be celebrations. You're not going to be in bed at 9 and up at 5 to look out every day. But what I'm trying to appreciate is when there are opportunities where you're out of routine, or you're at some kind of function. Speaking of going to the superintendent's conference, Jeff, I've been thinking about this a ton. What I'm learning is all these vendors want to take you to dinner and buy you drinks at these conferences. And I can see how in the day-to-day stress of the job, you're like, fantastic. I'm trying to figure out, how do I participate in that from a networking perspective, but still be ready to roll the next day? I think just that interdependence of the days and paying attention to how what you do today impacts tomorrow is a step we can all take every day.
To kind of build off what Larry said, it's knowing what your limits are, right? You have to know what your limits are, and everyone has different limits, right? Some people can eat terribly and be fully functional and full of energy, and where food like that bogged Larry down for a couple of days. People can go on.
They crossed pizza in this area, and I never eat it, but they got it, and it is so good. And boy, 2 or 3 slices too many. And honestly, like by Sunday, I'm still like, oh, what did I do?
So it's really knowing your limits, and really, and from my perspective, having gone through different seasons in my life and not having been being extra healthy as a young guy, to not being healthy, to not focusing on exercising and working out and maybe imbibing a little too much from time to time, trying to relive my college glory days, right, from on a Friday night. But so it's really knowing what your limits are. For example, I know that if I don't get at least 7 hours of sleep in my bed, I'm going to struggle to be able to pour into others when I come to work. Right. Yep. I need that 7 hour sleep. Others, I've read stories about the former coach, John Gruden, sleeps 2-3 hours a night. They never figured out why. And his doctor told his parents, make it his strength. He became a football wizard because he would take that time in the early morning hours to watch football film. That's all he did. Right. Those are his limits. He could survive on 2-3 hours of sleep and be a fully functional adult, where I can't. So really knowing your limits, who you are, what makes you tick. Being in tune with yourself, that's not selfish. That's pouring into yourself is what it is. It's okay to be selfish when it comes to yourself and learning yourself and what makes you tick and what makes you feel good and what you need for sleep and what you need for diet. Those things are essential.
Yeah. And we know more than we think we know too. And that's important, because when we really slow down and quiet down, we can listen to what our body actually is telling us that we need. We just don't often take the time because we'd rather be doing other things sometimes.
That's exactly. Like when you kind of lose your temper with your kids, right? I always 100% of the time feel extremely guilty seconds later, minutes later. Like, don't talk to your kids that way. They're 7, they're 5, they're 1. They're learning, I'm modeling, right? A temper, right? I don't want them to have a temper. But yeah, here I am. And I write about that in the book a little bit. One of my chapters I write about that is, do my words and my actions match? Right?
Yep.
And to me, that's the definition of integrity, right? So I got to try to be integrous with everything I do.
Yeah, that alignment is essential. Well, that has been extremely helpful. And I have one last question for both of you, which is something I ask all of my guests on Take Notes. What is your dream for the future of education? I ask this question as I'll give you a moment to think about, but I ask this question because I really believe that the more we're able to speak up about our dreams, the closer we are to actually achieving them. So I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
My dream for public education is that every child in whatever district they're in can pursue their life passion, right? It's creating multiple pathways for students to be successful and moving away from this idea that every kid has to go to college. That's my dream. It's great if you go to college. I'm a product of the college system, right? But not every kid is cut out. That's just the one pathway for kids. What other pathways can we put in place for kids to be successful, to pursue their dreams, to pursue their passions, and to be employable when they get that diploma? So having a meaning behind our diploma, what does this diploma represent? That's my dream for public education.
Yes.
And I'll build off that. I think for me, and again, coming from some bigger districts, more complex districts, now being in a smaller district, I still see on a smaller scale some of the same challenges of trying to put students in a position to be successful that don't fit the mold. When I fit the mold, my dad is a teacher, I bought into that smile and raise your hand and get a good grade philosophy. And I know there's kids walking around this building right now that don't fit into that. And it's a little bit like a square peg in a round hole. You can make the hole a little bit more squarish, right? Yeah. It can't be perfect, right? There's 1,600 kids in this district. We're not going to be able to personalize every aspect of the day for them. But some of the things happening with graduation requirements, I'm excited to see what that maybe brings and then be able to put some of those actions in place. I think that would probably be my dream. An extension of, I think, what Jeff said very well.
I love that too. So yes, more of that, please, for everyone. And that's really, you know, we're in the business of changing the world and it's really exciting. So thank you so much, both of you, for sharing your time and your expertise. The link to your book, Dads, Leaders, and Father Figures, is going to be right at the bottom of the show notes. So for those of you listening, go ahead and grab that on Amazon. Thank you again for everything. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Jen.
And for those of you listening, make sure you subscribe. And if you like this episode, please write a great review. And we'll see you next time on Take Notes.
Incredible, right? Together, we can revolutionize the face of education. It's all possible. And it's all here for you right now. Let's keep the conversation going at Empowered Educator Faculty Room on Facebook.